from deep inside your radio.
Actually, from the French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, ladies and gentlemen, where we are doing big-time radio here. The CD machines are numbered sequentially, which we think is the way to do it, after much empirical research. Welcome to our true friends in San Francisco, and welcome to the second hour of the show tonight in Pittsburgh. I know it sounds confusing, but this is this week's show. And to everybody all over the place, this is a momentous week in media history. This was the week that the head of CNN sided with Jon Stewart against his own show. When Jon Stewart, remember Jon Stewart in October, came on to Crossfire and knocked Crossfire, said it was, I believe the words were, partisan hackery. The president of CNN US this week announced he was canceling Crossfire, saying that Jon Stewart is right. I have only one personal experience with the show, aside from being a viewer, an unwilling and usually non-present viewer. One time they called me up, asked me to be on Crossfire. Now, you know that if you're in show business, especially in the comedy branch thereof, there are only a few dates during the year when they might call you from a show like that. One is New Year's Eve, because no one's watching and no one will come on. And one of the other nights is Oscar night, because they can't talk about politics. They feel they have to talk about show business. So in the great game of Rolodex roulette that is played at these shows, my name popped up on Oscar night, and the day of Oscar night, and I got a call from Crossfire saying, we want you to come on and defend Hollywood. That's why Crossfire should be canceled right there, because that's... Oh, okay, let me see what I would say. Still haven't actually thought of what I would say. Speaking of torture, ladies and gentlemen, you know that the president's nominee to be attorney general, the attorney general designate, Alberto Gonzalez, had his one day of confirmation hearings this week and announced that he is against torture. Now, I am racking my brain. I haven't seen most of the confirmation hearings of most of the attorneys general of my lifetime, but I've read the reports about them. I'm going to just take a wild guess and say this is the first time that an attorney general designated a nomination hearing has gone on record against torture. Why did he have to do that? Well, you know, he wrote that memo that was cited by many of his critics as condoning the practices, shall we say, the practices at Abu Ghraib and later in Guantanamo. And so he felt constrained in his opening statement to say he's against torture, even though he denied that he had ever been for it, you see. Just to be on the safe side, he's against it. Now, some listeners to this program have alleged that either the choice of music or the odd schedule of preemptions by many local stations amounts to something cruel and unusual. I'm going to, never having condoned torture, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw in with Alberto Gonzalez. Right here, right now, live radio, I am against torture. You can just tape that, put it in the library, or the library. I'm against torture. I challenge other broadcasters to join me in taking the anti-torture pledge. Hello, welcome to the show.
Hey, oh, hey, yeah. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. I'm taking my freedom, pulling it off the shelf. It on my chain, wearing it round my neck. I'm taking my freedom.
Her daddy's doorbell was ringing when I called on the telephone. He was the one to answer me, so I told him what was going on. Said, I love your daughter, but we don't get along. I said, I love your daughter.
From the historic French Quarter of New Orleans, Louisiana, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to the show. And I guess I don't consider playing a brand new CD with defects on a professional CD machine to be torture. So I'm cool with the pledge. Ladies and gentlemen, a few years ago, approaching the millennium, the New York Times and others, other media, poked a finger of derision at Los Angeles, California, for its meager and desultory attempts to celebrate the millennium, pointing in contrast to the grand efforts of London, England, which spent £1 billion, that would be almost $1.5 billion in current, it's more than that, to build the Millennium Dome, a huge indoor space in a previously ignored part of town, which was to be used for, and that's where the planning kind of petered out. They had some exhibits and some stuff and some lights and some things, but they really didn't know what to use it for. And therefore, nobody came, and therefore it became a billion-pound white elephant that I have been watching with interest ever since because, of course, being a native Angeleno, I kind of got ticked that we were tasked by the New York Times, taken to task for not having built a billion-dollar dome in Los Angeles to celebrate the millennium. What are they using it for now? A charity is celebrating the success of a pioneering scheme, meaning plan, that's British for plan, which has seen more than 700 homeless people spending the holiday period in London's Millennium Dome. That's right. They spent £1 billion to create Santa Monica. Congratulations to you all. Ladies and gentlemen, let's now celebrate a couple of improbable events, both of them involving Rupert Murdoch. First, the Murdoch-owned satellite channel in Britain, B Sky B, it's called. Sky is actually the name of the channel, but the company is called B Sky B, has patented new technology that allows television viewers to record favorite programs without ad breaks. Rupert is against advertising? News that the pay television company controlled by Rupert Murdoch could allow viewers to eliminate commercials will alarm rival broadcasters. Ah, I see. As well as the advertising industry itself. Sky has a current personal video recorder that allows users to skip through commercials. However, even when played at 30 times normal speed, they can still be seen. New technology, Sky can offer a service that allows viewers much greater control. One patent allows viewers to interrupt the recording of programs so as not to record commercials, for example. Thank you, Rupert. And, equally improbable, the Fox network in this country has rejected a commercial for the Super Bowl or offering a view of Mickey Rooney's backside. In the spot for Airborne, a natural cold remedy, the 87-year-old star such movies as National Velvet and Andy Hardy films is in a sauna when someone behind him coughs. He overreacts, jumps up, screams, and heads for the door. In his rush, he drops his towel, baring his backside for about 2 seconds. Says Lou D'Amelio, spokesman for Fox Sports, our standards department reviewed the ad. It was deemed inappropriate for broadcast. Ladies and gentlemen, Mickey Rooney's ass is inappropriate for broadcasting on Fox. You want to know where they draw the line? That's where they draw the line. The co-owner of Airborne says it's nothing sexual about the ad. It's tantamount to showing a baby's bottom. Well, if you by tantamount you mean at the other end of the spectrum, yes. Rooney was planning a Super Bowl party, he says in a statement. He's angry. Well, we're selling here something I really believe in, which is an awareness of the germs we're all exposed to. There's nothing sensual about the brief exposure of my backside. It's a fun spot. The public deserves to see it. Mickey, just a note. The public doesn't deserve to see any advertising. The public may not be able to avoid it, but we don't deserve it. It's not, we did nothing wrong that I know about. Ladies and gentlemen, time now for a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. A feature called, let's see if it's the CD's fault or the CD player's fault. No, it's a feature called Tales of Airport Security. A couple tales, this one from Russ. Dear Harry, last month I was checking in for my flight to L.A., at an airline that probably should remain nameless, in Guadalajara, Mexico, when the agent offered to upgrade me to first class for a reasonable sum of $50. Seemed like a bargain, so I paid the $50, collected my boarding pass, and proceeded to go through security. After my backpack was x-rayed, I was asked to give up my miniature Swiss Army pocket knife that I'd absentmindedly left attached to my keychain. The security agent told me in a genuinely helpful and friendly manner that I could go back to the terminal and mail it home to myself if I wanted to keep it. I soon discovered the flaw in that plan. There are no longer any mailboxes in or around the airport. So I gave up, handed the knife to a kid shining shoes, and went back through security, disarmed. Shortly after boarding the flight, a smiling, perky young flight attendant offered me a beverage, and soon after takeoff, the attendants began the meal service in first class. As I unrolled the fine linen napkin, I discovered that I'd been given a fork, a spoon, and a metal serrated knife. I mentioned to the flight attendant that I was under the impression that metal utensils had been banned even in first class. She simply shrugged and said, Not on our airline, I guess. The airline is Alaska Airlines. Oh, who said that? Dear Harry, this is from Chris in Illinois. Dear Harry, I have transgressed. I'm one of those who are not content with merely just getting from place to place, but feel the compulsion to aim a camera out the window and photograph our great land below. My sins were revealed to me by a well-meaning and patriotic flight attendant who informed me on a recent American Airlines flight from Las Vegas to Chicago that photography is no longer allowed on airplanes. And she rightfully assured me that it's a whole different world out there since 9/11. I had clicked off nearly 100 photos out the window of such sensitive locales as Valley of Fire, Zion National Park, Lake Mead, Bryce Canyon, and the snow-covered Rockies. I acquiesced and squelched the urge to take further snapshots. From now on, Harry, I resolved never to take an aerial photo again. And I promise the next flight I'm on, that window shade is coming right down. Because as an American, there are simply some things too precious to commit to memory. That's from Chris in Illinois. Ladies and gentlemen, another tale of airport security, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. So I guess we blame Jill Scott. Now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside and inside the bubble. Some things you may have missed in our wondrous adventure. A senior advisory board to Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld recommends a significant expansion of the State Department to cope with the diplomatic challenges of nation-building efforts that cannot be met by the Pentagon. Let's just review. Was it not the State Department that had, I think, a 1,000-page plan generated to deal with the post-war situation in Iraq? Yes, it was. Was it not the Pentagon that ignored it? Yes, it was. Thank you. The new study by the Defense Science Board, this is reported by the Boston Globe, also takes indirect aim at the Bush administration's preparations for post-war Iraq, saying that achieving political success following military victory requires, quote, effective planning and preparation in the years before the outbreak of hostilities. It also declares that nation-building efforts in unstable environments such as Iraq require about 20 occupation troops for every 1,000 people. In Iraq, that would mean a U.S. stabilization force of 500,000 troops. Current U.S. troop allotment in Iraq? 150,000, thank you for asking. The report was commissioned a year ago by Rumsfeld to explore the lessons of the military's lack of preparedness. It also says the nation-building efforts depend upon a stronger partnership and working relationship between defense and state. Hey, that'd be a good idea. According to the report, instead of treating post-war rebuilding as a key of defense planning, the Defense Department does not regard it as a core mission with the same seriousness as combat operations. This mindset must be changed, this report says. It says the Pentagon has to be willing to share more of its plans with the State Department, something it's been reluctant to do. The United States cannot succeed at the last minute, it says. Shortchanging fundamental capabilities and preparation actually significantly raises costs. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where we are now. On the other hand, here's Paul Wolfowitz just before the war started, February 28, 2003. He called the recent, then-recent estimate by General Eric Shinseki, Army Chief of Staff, that several hundred thousand troops would be needed in post-war Iraq, quote, wildly off the mark. No more than 100,000 would be needed, Wolfowitz said. He said, for one thing, there was no history of ethnic strife in Iraq. Check out Brent Scowcroft's comments this week that Iraq may plunge into civil war after the election. Based on, I guess, ethnic strife. He said, Wolfowitz did, in February of 2003, Iraqi civilians would welcome an American-led liberation force that stayed as long as necessary but left as soon as possible. I would expect, said Wolfowitz, that even countries like France will have a strong interest in assisting Iraq in reconstruction. I expect we will get a lot of mitigation in helping to pay for the war. It will be easier after the fact than before the fact. The fact meaning the war, Wolfowitz said. Wolfowitz spent much of the hearing knocking down published estimates of the costs of war and rebuilding, saying the upper range of estimates, pre-war estimates, of $95 billion was too high. We are now, just to remind you, ladies and gentlemen, $200 billion in and counting. He said such estimates and speculation that post-war reconstruction costs could climb even higher ignored the fact that Iraq is a wealthy country with annual oil exports worth $15 to $20 billion. To assume we're going to pay for it all, Wolfowitz said in February of 2003, is just wrong. And he has just been asked to stay on. It's an accountability administration, ladies and gentlemen. The Army Reserve, you heard about this, is rapidly degenerating into a broken force, its top general told senior Army leaders. General James R. Ron Helmley, chief of the Army Reserve, said the unwillingness of Army and Pentagon officials to change dysfunctional policies that hamper the reserve on issues such as training, extension of service, and the mobilization of his soldiers is putting his command in grave danger. The purpose of this memorandum is to inform you of the Army Reserve's inability to meet mission requirements associated with Iraq and Afghanistan, he said. I do not wish to sound alarmist. I do wish to send a clear, distinctive signal of deepening concern. Unquote. Add to the conservatives now discovering that the Iraq War might not have been the best idea since sliced bread, Newt Gingrich. Newt Gingrich, in an interview with the Associated Press on the post-war in Iraq, he said President Bush had signed off on an adequate post-war plan, but it was abandoned by former Iraq Administrator L. Paul Bremer. It's Let's Kick Jerry Bremer Day. Quote, Newt Gingrich, when Bremer arrived, he thought he was Douglas MacArthur in Japan. He thought he had 5 years to build an Americ-centric model. He just basically amputated the entire post-war plan, says Gingrich. He says, however, that Bremer should not be a scapegoat for Rumsfeld, Powell, Cheney, and Bush. Quote, whatever mistakes Bremer made were not corrected by his bosses, who were Rumsfeld, Powell, Cheney, and the president, says Gingrich. Gingrich adds, these men were apparently too exhausted or focused on Bush's reelection campaign to curb Bremer. This is Newt Gingrich talking. Bush recently awarded Bremer the Presidential Medal of Freedom for his work in Iraq. He also awarded it to George Tenet, who was being criticized by internal investigations at the CIA as not being on top of the pre-9/11 intelligence thing, you know. Ladies and gentlemen. Newt Gingrich checking in. How many insurgents in Iraq? 200,000. Far higher number than the U.S. military has so far admitted, paints a much grimmer picture of the challenge, according to the London Times. The number comes from the head of Iraq's intelligence service, General Mohammed Abdullah Shawani. Shawani, how I love you. People are fed up after 2 years without improvement, says General Shawani. People are fed up with no security, no electricity. People feel they have to do something. This is one of those naysayers, the head of Iraq's intelligence service, General Shawani. We're going to get help from everybody after the war. Russia has reiterated it would not send its troops to Iraq and criticized what it calls the isolation of various political groups not represented in the country's interim government, says Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov. The idea of sending troops to Iraq is rather absurd. Nobody has even mentioned it. Nobody has ever mentioned or even thought of it, he said. The war on drugs may be hurting us in Afghanistan, according to the Pentagon. Senior U.S. generals are raising objections to moves to step up U.S. troops' involvement in counter-narcotics operations because it could alienate regional warlords whose support is needed to provide security for the upcoming parliamentary election in Afghanistan. This is your brain voting on drugs. Officials involved in a tense debate inside the Pentagon, this is according to the Financial Times of London, officials involved in a tense debate inside the Pentagon over the U.S. military's role in eradicating poppy fields, there's widespread agreement, I'm going to get my nouns and verbs to agree yet, there is widespread agreement that the burgeoning drug trade risks corrupting the fledgling government, but a split is open between senior military officers who were worried that an onslaught on the trade could unsettle the country ahead of the parliamentary elections, and Pentagon civilians, like Paul Wolfowitz, who fear that increasing drug revenues could be used to influence the vote. Central Command would prefer not to be in the eradication business, says Lieutenant General Lance Smith, CENTCOM's deputy commander. We've spent a lot of capital trying to build relationships with people in there, and now this has the potential for us to do things that wouldn't be popular for some of the areas we're operating in. You see, the warlords happen to be in the running the drug trade, don't you know? The Army, beset with complaints that its troops are going to combat in inadequately armored Humvees, will send older and less used armor personnel characters to Iraq after spending $84 million to add armor for them. Army officials who pushed hard over the last 2 years for getting the M113 into duty in Iraq said it was more useful, cheaper, and easier to transport than the new Stryker armored vehicle being in Iraq. The Army spent hundreds of millions of dollars buying armored Humvees at $150,000 each, more than 80,000 M113s have been manufactured since they were introduced in 1960. They still do yeoman duty in many of the world's armies. The current demand in Iraq is for more than 22,000 armor-protected Humvees, a goal the Army says it will meet sometime between now and March. Use the old ones. They're lighter and better. And finally, getting back to torture for a minute, U.S. Army doctors violated the Geneva Conventions, by helping intelligence officers carry out abusive interrogations at military detention centers, perhaps participating in torture, according to the New England Journal of Medicine. Medical personnel helped tailor the interrogations to the physical and mental conditions of individual detainees at Abu Ghraib and at Guantanamo, according to the article. Medical workers gave interrogators access to patient medical files, and psychiatrists and other physicians collaborated with interrogators and guards. Clearly, the medical personnel who helped to develop and execute aggressive counter-resistance plans thereby breached the laws of war, says the New England Journal of Medicine. The conclusion that doctors participated in torture is premature, but there is probable cause for suspecting it. And a British detainee at Guantanamo Bay has told his lawyer he was tortured using the strapado, a technique common in Latin American dictatorships in which a prisoner is left suspended from a bar with handcuffs until they cut deeply into his wrists. The reason, the prisoner says, was that he was caught reciting the Quran at a time when talking was banned. He also said he's been repeatedly shaved against his will. In one such incident, a guard told him, "This is the part that really gets to you Muslims, isn't it?" It is reported today, ladies and gentlemen, that the vast majority of the detainees at Guantanamo, the ones who are going to be kept there for the rest of their lives, if plans go according to what we think, is the vast majority have nothing, no useful intelligence, and are not now viewed as even interesting enough to interrogate. This despite the fact that an Army official said as recently as November, we're still getting a lot of good stuff out of these guys. You figure it out. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dateline Baghdad. Five Iraqis were killed early on Saturday when an American warplane dropped a 500-pound bomb on the wrong house during an attack on insurgents in northern Iraq, the military said. Yes, it sounds like the war on drugs, except with planes. The intended target was another location nearby, said the military in a statement. Multinational Force Iraq, That apparently is the name of our force, MNFI, deeply regrets the loss of possibly innocent lives. Japanese celebrity Shinsuke Shimada returned to TV screens last week, ending a 2-month self-imposed exile after he bashed and injured a female employee of his talent agency. 48-year-old Shimada deeply apologized to his victim as well as viewers. "I caused trouble to numerous people. I've never regretted what I did more deeply than now. I would like to humbly accept severe criticism. I'd like to improve myself." That's an apology. The Chicago Sun-Times apologized for putting year-end 2003 stock prices instead of 2004 stock prices and headlined it with, quote, "A urgent message to our print readers," unquote. Dateline, Douglas County, Oregon, a Republican political action committee that used erroneous information in a fall campaign mailing targeting Democratic Senator Floyd Prozanski has apologized. The brochure from the Leadership Fund claimed that Prozanski voted to reduce an income tax kicker, whatever that is, and during a special session voted to support raising income taxes. Prozanski was not a member of the Oregon legislature during those 2 years. Quote, "On behalf of the Leadership Fund, I offer a sincere and heartfelt apology," wrote the chairman of the committee. "We deeply regret these mischaracterizations and wish to set the record straight." That's news. From Starbucks. "To our valued customers, on January 5, we sent you an email describing our new Black Apron aged Sumatra Lot 523 coffee. The message conveyed how proud we are of this new coffee, but did not address our deep sadness and concern for the tremendous loss of life and devastation in the recent natural disaster in Southeast Asia. We would like to apologize for any unintentional offense caused by that email." National Geographic Institute deleted the name Arabian Gulf in its latest world atlas that had riled the Iranians. "The name primarily used for this gulf throughout history has been the Persian Gulf," said National Geographic. National Geographic president apologized for the institute's mistake in the historical name of Persian Gulf and announced its readiness to compensate for it. "We're going to pay Iran for calling it the Arabian Gulf?" Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know. On Kurdistan satellite TV this week, U.S. General Hamm apologized to the people for the attack on the Arbil University dormitory 2 nights ago. Exactly. That's more than 2 nights now. Calling the incident a mistake by U.S. forces, General Hamm stated, "I asked the president, the Kurdistan regional government, and the people of Arbil to accept our sincere apologies." No mention was made about why the U.S. forces had attacked the university. The general only called the operation a mistake. A 59-year-old great-grandmother who claimed to be pregnant with twins is not actually expecting. She made the claim to the Associated Press last year, but for now, Frances Harris has released a statement saying, "To the surprise of even her family, it was recently discovered that she is not pregnant with twins. Due to some personal issues that are still being evaluated, she believed she was pregnant." Harris and her family expressed regret in the statement and apologized for any inconvenience. The family says it wishes to put the situation behind them. Best place for it, I say. Ladies and gentlemen, when you have to put a situation somewhere in your vicinity, behind you is the place to put it. A private lawyer and a state representative for a district in Hawaii, Alex Sonson, is being suspended by the Hawaii Supreme Court from the practice of law for 3 months because of ethical violations. "I take full responsibility for my actions. Will cooperate fully with the decision of the Office of Disciplinary Counsel," Sonson said. "I would also like to apologize to my clients and my constituents for these errors, and I want to assure them it will not happen again." He took legal fees and spent it on himself. A one-time Idaho House of Representatives candidate won't face criminal charges after mailing his Republican primary opponent a fake certificate for one visit to Dr. Jack Kevorkian. Mike Adams apologized and said it was meant only as a joke. Amateurs doing humor, ladies and gentlemen. And finally, Armstrong Williams, prominent conservative columnist, paid was paid $241,000 by the United States Education Department, taxpayers' money, to help promote the No Child Left Behind law. It was funneled through the Ketchum public relations firm. Williams was asked to produce an era commercial and a syndicated television show featuring Rod Page, Secretary of Education, and to urge other programs to interview Page. He did not disclose the contract when talking about the law on TV or writing about it in his newspaper column. Williams, one of the most prominent black conservatives in the media, said he understands why some people think it's unethical. And he has apologized. The buried lead in the story is that even though he's a commentator and a columnist, Armstrong Williams also runs a public relations firm. Ladies and gentlemen, the Apologies of the Week, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. Now, you probably saw President Clinton on with Larry King this week, or at least saw that he made a proposal. You probably saw the on-air version of that. Here is the a found object, the off-air moment when Clinton thinks of the idea, and an observation that he doesn't bother to share with Larry King on the air at the end.
I got a great idea for him. That's what I was going to say. These questions he's asking us, he ought to get representatives of all the faiths affected by this. He ought to get a Buddhist, a Hindu, a Muslim, and a Christian. Those are the four main ones. And put them on and ask them how they view this against their faith. It would be fascinating. Yeah, I bet it would be one of the most watched programs that he's had in a long time.
Huh. Yeah.
And ask them what is the response of this mindless tragedy and innocent slaughter. What is the way they look at it? Because they're very different views. The Hindus, the Buddhists, the Muslims, and the Christians have very different views of it. But they all, it would be fascinating. And I bet you people would watch it all over the world in huge numbers. You might have a lot of people switching religions.
What? Might have a lot of people switching religions? What are you suggesting, sir? Who's got the best attitude? Ladies and gentlemen, to news of the disaster. A Swedish newspaper, Expressen, reports a crisis meeting attended by Thailand's foremost meteorological experts who decided not to issue a warning about the tsunami an hour before the first massive wave struck. Quote, out of courtesy to the tourist industry, we decided not to do anything, explained one of the meteorological experts, because the tourist season was in full swing. The hotels were 100% booked full. What if we issued a warning which would have led to an evacuation and nothing had happened? What would be the outcome? The tourist industry would be immediately hurt. Our department would not be able to endure a lawsuit. Unquote. And touring Sri Lanka. And there's some talk now that, we've had too many VIPs touring the affected region because now to make way for their flights, the airports have to close. And so relief cannot get in. This follows, you know, complaints last week that not enough bigwigs were visiting or paying attention. So, you know, bigwigs can't win. Bill Frist, majority leader in the U.S. Senate, visited southern Sri Lanka on Thursday, pledged U.S. government support. Just before his helicopter lifted off, Frist and aides took snapshots of each other near a pile of tsunami debris. Frist told a photographer, get some devastation in the back. It's hard, ladies and gentlemen, to know what exactly the broadcasts have now run the we're very familiar with the footage, although new footage does keep coming, but the reports of the devastation are of course phenomenal. The estimates, Australia has now given $700 million American to aid Indonesia alone. And Colin Powell and conservatives keep saying America's giving more than anybody, even though our current pledge is $350 million. That's less than half of Australia. They must have more people. And the question now is, once the situation has been stabilized, once drinking water has been brought, once the threat of disease has been quelled, the big question is, of course, reconstruction. And our army, our military are doing a great job in bringing relief supplies in. But how is this massive reconstruction job going to be done? Well, we haven't done it yet, ladies and gentlemen, but it seems to me we have to send our best.
There's always too much to do and not enough time. And the results...
Oh, no!
Oh, my God.
You're kidding.
Cool.
...are what it's all about. Welcome to the show that goes anywhere on the globe to make it someplace special. This is Designs on the World.
Okay, gang. This week, any doubt where we're going?
It's got the need.
We've got the speed.
Indonesia!
Welcome to Banda Aceh.
Hey, more important than even being sorry. We've got work to do.
Looks like we've got a whole beachfront to fix up.
How about a whole island?
Down, big fella.
It's me, Travis. This was the biggest project the Designs on the World team had ever taken on. I mean, this place had taken a biblical smacking, and we had 3 days to get it looking good. First, around the fire that night, Carly, Jason, and I had what I guess you'd call a powwow. We gotta move the smashed up boats and houses. Mm-hmm. That's gonna take...
longer than we've got.
Here's the deal. We don't move them.
What?
We don't have the equipment. We don't have the place
okay,
to put
okay,
them.
Okay,
we know what we don't have. Mm. What else we don't have is a plan.
Who's this we, Kibasabe?
Jason had a plan, all right. One thing we did have plenty of was canvas. And a bunch of children who were overdue for some fun.
Okay, how many of you guys would like to help make an indigenous pattern on this canvas? Wouldn't that be a cool idea?
Yay! You think they know what indigenous means?
God, I hope so, because Jason sure doesn't.
So what we're doing is... going to wrap the canvas around the wreckage?
Mm-hmm. It's a crystal-like thing.
Hmm. But we have to get tourists back to this beach or our people will starve.
I hear you. Nothing draws tourists like big wacky art stuff.
I'm beginning to be glad we brought him along.
And while the kids are knocking out the design, we've got to get busy building the interactive center and gift shop.
Uh-oh, I'm hearing beveling.
Hey, Carly.
Yeah.
You see those giant pot-like things?
Yeah, I think they held the ponds before the hotel was wrecked.
Sudden thought.
Hmm.
We hang them upside down.
Lighting fixtures?
You know what? I'm beginning to be glad we brought you along.
Okay, we gotta put a 12-foot ladder every 6 feet all the way around the debris.
My goodness, you have that many ladders.
Yeah, we got a hardware tie-in. Now, let's get all the kids up on the ladders. You ready, guys?
Yeah!
Let's do this thing. Not only did we bring a lot of ladders, we brought a boatload of Designs on the World t-shirts. The kids loved them. They went like hotcakes. Actually, hotcakes would have gone a little bit faster. These kids were hungry.
Jason, these fabrics are amazing.
Yeah, they better be. That's our window treatment. Uh-huh. And our window.
God, but they're soaked.
Oh, I know. This is our tragic fate. The pro hair dryers are all being used by makeup. Oh, well, we dry on.
Meanwhile, back at the big art piece, things were going slowly. Yo, Jason.
Uh-huh.
Every time the kids try to drape the canvas on the debris, it just... I guess the only way to put it is, it just doesn't drape.
Oh, my God. I forgot to mention how the canvas is attached to the wreckage.
Nail gun! By this time, the kids were up way past their bedtime, but we had a citation from the Indonesian Tourism Board riding on getting this all done by the deadline. And if we couldn't sleep,
nobody sleeps.
Okay, this is fiberboard paneling.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks like it.
We brought it.
It doesn't grow here, Carly. Now, three shades of paint in the mustardy range. Your choice.
I like this one.
Okay, we don't want it to be too lemony or too buttery or too beigey. I like it.
It's gonna look way tropical.
It better. Okay, it's draping good on the beach side, but you know there's a droop on the leeward side,
and it's nailed.
Bad news first.
Yeah,
we ran out of nails.
Earth to Travis.
Mm-hmm.
The production office has staples.
Staples works for me.
These are some railroad ties from where the track was all ripped up.
Mm-hmm. Are you thinking what I'm thinking?
Mega distressed beams for the ceiling.
I am smelling gift shop. Before you knew it, our 3 days were up. The local residents were being bussed back from their trip to get vaccinated. And we were prom night nervous, as well as way over caffeinated.
This is the gift shop.
Well, what do you think? I'm glad you like it.
I'm really glad.
Hey, guys.
Yeah?
I don't want to jump to conclusions or anything, but I think we just passed our final.
Making the Earth look better, one episode at a time. This is Designs on the World, produced by the Reality Channel. Reality, we're always making it better. See you next week.
Sometimes I wonder what my heart's supposed to do. Yesterday she needed me, today she says we're through. She ripped my heart to pieces, tore my soul apart. And now she wants to know how to get back in my heart. Well, you don't have to beg, don't have to cry, just a walk back in, dry your weeping eyes. Don't have to run, man, don't have to crawl, just a walk back in, we can start. Such a fool boy, that's all that she wrote. She said life ain't worth living without you by my side. She stood there trembling, asking me if my love had died. I said you don't have to, don't have to cry. Start all over again, baby. it out, 'cause you don't have to beg, you don't have to cry. Just a warm nagging, we can start all over again.
Ladies and gentlemen, how about some stories of accountability? It's an accountability society we have, isn't it? Texas has distributed hundreds of, you've heard of Texas, distributed hundreds of millions of dollars in Homeland Security grants over the last several years, but has not ensured the money is being spent to prevent terrorist attacks, according to a Texas state audit. The audit focuses on the state's management of funds, noting that it essentially stopped after the state handed out the money. The agency insists it has done an exceptional job. Says Jason Cook, an agency spokesman, it has been our indication that the Federal Office of Domestic Preparedness considers us a model agency. I think he means a model agency. The Pentagon is sending a retired four-star Army general to Iraq to conduct an open-ended review of the military's entire Iraqi policy, including training programs for Iraqi forces. The officer doing the review is General Luck. General Luck. But he's examining the training of the security forces in Iraq. Wasn't that the bang-up job done by Bernie Kerik, who was supposed to be head of Homeland Security until he plummeted? I'm just asking. For accountability purposes. And the Government Accountability Office said that the Bush administration violated federal law by producing and distributing television news segments about the effects of drug use among young people. Just a violation of the law, nothing to get concerned about. That's enough accountability for this week. That concludes this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe on the USAN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz. Around the globe via the internet at two locations, harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, live and archive on Sirius Satellite Radio, channel 108. And available as a free download at www.audible.com/LeShow. I'm not saying you should slash LeShow, like certain stations have done. I'm just saying that's the address. And it would be just like General Luck reporting for duty, if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Uh-huh. Email address for this broadcast is lemail@interworld.net. The show internet services by Steve Mack. A salute to the show San Diego and Pittsburgh desks. The show playlists available at harryshearer.com. And a tip of the show chapeau to Bob Dunn, today playing air organ. Comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as, aside from the Millennium Dome, the home of the homeless.